Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 79.
This week on the podcast, a roundup of the inconsequential, unnewsy news of the week.
And the Republican strategy to defund Obamacare, now with more confusing twists.
Sadly, mass shootings surpassed Miley Cyrus twerking videos as America's hottest trend.
And the president and vice president of Selfie Town get together to talk smack about wieners.
Plus, Republicans are certain that Jesus would starve the poor and hate the gays.
All this and more. This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila.
And you know what? We're on the web.
We're on
the internet.
Find us online.
Yes.
Our website is pretty easy to find because it's just www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, you should be able to find it.
Exactly. And we're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. Where we post genius thoughts.
I was going to say, we're doing some heroic tumbling that you may or may not know about. If you don't, then get into it.
You should get on board.
Yeah.
It's the right choice.
Yeah.
So, the Emmys just finished. We're recording a little later than usual because we had to watch a three-hour award show to learn that nothing really has changed. Jim Parsons is still the winner for Best Actor in a Comedy Series.
Still pissing me off. Yeah. That happens.
Well, I was saying to Brent during the show, I was like, if you can now say that it annoys you that he wins, plural, he's won too many times.
Right.
If you could have said that once, he would have won
too many times. Oh, it annoyed me Jim Parsons won last year.
Yeah.
That's a sort of like a statement that is sort of a reasonable statement because, like, you can be mad that he won once. You just become incensed that he's won three times.
It's just like a thing that now he's just the winner of that category in perpetuity forever and ever.
Yeah.
But there were some great bits done by our favorite cast of Veep.
Yes, Julia Louis-Dreyfus when she won, and thank God she won because that was awesome. But like she did a great bit with what's his name? Who also won for a supporting actor.
Is it Tony Hale?
Yeah, Tony Hale. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
And that was funny. And from Nurse Jackie.
Merritt Weaver got up and was like, I'm sorry, I have to go.
I have to go now. And then just wandered off stage. It was perfect.
It was the speech that you wish everyone would give.
Totally.
It's the perfect award show speech in general.
Yeah.
They could do trainings in that.
There were also some in memoriam sort of problems going on.
No, they weren't snafus.
They weren't
intentional.
They were perfectly planned.
They were just bad.
They were bad.
They basically decided to put an in memoriam sort of interlude after like every happy award that was won.
Right.
So someone would
be
happy.
With some sort of crying celebrity, like talking about
they would like wander off
dead
stage,
best friend,
and then it's like Edie Falco crying, go. Or like Robin Williams crying, go.
Right, and Robin Williams was the first one, too, and it was so weird because he was like, doing bits because it was, like, you know,
I mean,
because
it was a comedic actor that he was memorializing. But because of it, it just sort of, like, was a downer because it kept coming back.
Right.
You'd be like, oh, okay, we've done the in memoriam thing now. And then another sad celebrity would appear on stage and they'd do a sweeping camera motion and you'd be like, shit.
Oh, God, I know.
This again.
And the guy who accepted the award for Modern Family said, he goes, well, this may be the saddest award show ever, but we're sure happy.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that somebody sort of like got around to referencing it by the end of the show because it was like, don't be doing that.
No.
And then there was like clapping all throughout the taped piece.
I was saying to Brent as the sort of in memoriam montage where all of the lesser celebrities get memorialized, that usually at an award show they tell you not to clap so that you don't end up either looking like you're happy someone died
There's so many reasons to not clap.
Like you don't care about the people that you didn't clap for.
Yeah.
But apparently no one had warned this Emmys audience, who, by the way, frequent award shows. It's not like they didn't know.
It's not the first time at the rodeo.
It's a rule that everyone knows.
Yeah.
And so we start seeing some celebrities. We hear scattered clapping.
Yep.
But then it starts to roll into like the PR people and like the producers.
Right, like somebody's publicist.
No one
like,
knows
no.
who those people are.
No.
So no one was
and
clapping for
silence,
those people.
And then you feel bad for those
then,
people.
Then mysteriously there were some people they couldn't get clear photos of.
Oh yeah, they had like, a lot of fuzzy
these
photos.
These people are
of people.
All in entertainment. They all have a
they
photograph
have
somewhere.
Right.
Like there's no reason you need like a fuzzy photograph of some guy that no one's heard of anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bonkers.
Uh-huh.
And it was 3 hours long. So all of that was happening.
Yeah. And the opening bit was weird.
It was
Neil
weird.
Patrick
Wasn't
Harris
that great?
Binge watching every single season of Din. There was like that was weird. There was a great dance number in the middle of it with all of the people who are nominated for Best Choreography.
They finally realized that the only chance they have of being entertaining at all is to either have Tina Fey do a bit or to have a dance number.
Yeah.
And if you're going to have Neil Patrick Harris host, like, don't not do a dance number.
Yeah, right?
That's crazy.
There was a weird sort of Carrie Underwood Beatles performance that somehow had
something
to do with...
It was, like, memorializing, like, the 60s or something?
It was
like,
weird, like, the 50th anniversary...
68
Don Cheadle attempted to explain it to us in some way that I wasn't really following.
It was
because
just
it started
about the
with,
entire history of
started
television.
It started with Kennedy dying, and then it was about the Beatles, and then there was, like, a whole... I mean, it just didn't...
And he never even mentioned, like, they... Behind Carrie Underwood, there were pictures of Bob Dylan and Martin Luther King. He never even mentioned those two in his history of the television.
Well, he did Martin Luther King.
He did do Martin... I missed Martin.
I was going to say, well, it was weird, because I was sort of like, is he just giving us that... I was waiting for, like, a 50-year... Yeah, historical review
and
of
then,
television.
In 1972, things turned around again.
I know.
That's a fair enough reason to have a three-hour award show.
So that was weird. And she sort of struggled her way through that song,
wasn't
too.
Wasn't a great version of Yesterday.
No, it wasn't.
And, like, sorry, if the Beatles are able to sing it on key, like, Carrie Underwood, who is a superior vocalist, should have been able to get through it.
You know that she's in The Sound of Music that they're redoing.
That's I did not know that.
It's not going to be on MSNBC. It's going to just be on regular NBC over the holidays.
The liberal.
Yeah.
Liberal reworking of The Sound of Music.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
But, yeah, so that just happened. I assume people will talk about it tomorrow. Nobody knows.
I guess.
The last
time... there were some sort of surprises. I mean, I don't think people thought Jeff Daniels was going to win.
No, I don't
And I was excited about that because everybody knows about my newsroom obsession, so I was super into that.
I don't think anyone thought Merritt Weaver was going to win.
Well, obviously, least of all her.
Speech. Yeah. she set a standard, though, that other people didn't live up to.
Yeah, she did.
But, yeah, I feel like I watch these award shows, and then I sort of later am like, did I care about that? I can't tell. And it's... I maybe didn't.
You don't always.
No, it's hard. Especially the Emmys. I feel like everyone has an Emmy. Like, haven't you ever, like, gone to someone's house in L.A. and been like, oh, you have an Emmy, too? Like, everyone has a fucking Emmy.
They kept saying they would be like, Breaking Bad, this is their second victory tonight, and nominated for 46 earlier in the week. It's sort of like, wait, what now?
They 46 were Emmys?
Wait, what?
Yeah. Like, people are winning those left, right, and center for all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah.
There's... It's not a high standard that you have to reach to get an Emmy, apparently.
Apparently.
In any case, the other big news of the week in fake news was that a new iPhone got released. And mysteriously, that was significantly more important to various headline writers than really anything else that happened.
Yes, exactly.
Some things did happen this week, but none of them were the iPhone.
Because
being
it wasn't
released.
Even sort of like one of those like iPhone game changers. Like, I sort of like the 5 came out and it was sort of like, all right, well, this
there
is.
It is.
But that was even sort of like, there was a sort of. I felt like there was, like, a... And I realize this is only the 5S. So, like, it's not the 6. But I feel like between, like, even the 4S and the 5, like, there were sort of, like, enough sort of, like, game-changing things that were going on. It's like, this basically just, like, runs a little bit faster and then has a fucking fingerprint thing on.
Yeah.
Like,
and the fingerprint thing creeps me out a little bit.
A little bit.
I'm not trying to have my fingerprints known to Apple and any other...
And
the world.
Yes, anyone else by way of Apple,
exactly.
Basically.
Because hackers have already figured out how to get over how to get through it.
Yeah.
There was a contest earlier in the week. It's already been won. So that's over now. If you thought fingerprints were security, you're wrong.
Yeah.
People were waiting online. There were a lot of slideshows in the news of people doing victory dances outside of various Apple stores.
Yes.
I love, who are these people that wait online for days every time this happens? The guy who got the first one in New York at the Midtown Apple store, he'd been online for like 14 days.
Wow.
Like, 14
days?
I know,
does he have a job? They're expensive.
Right? Like, where did he get the money to buy the iPhone?
Yeah.
And, like, is it worth a 14-day... Like, is it worth $200 and a 14-day wait?
No.
It's not.
No.
We have the answer for you right here.
Yeah.
It's not.
They also released the 5C.
Right. Those are colorful, but they're just iPhone 5s.
And they're plastic.
They're plastic. Well, I broke my phone last week, and I was almost like, maybe I should just get the 5C, because it's the same phone, and it will come in a color. But then I was like... I don't really want a plastic phone for the same price that I can just get my phone fixed. Like,
that's true.
Once I have my phone that's made of real materials, like, I don't necessarily want to downgrade to plastic just for the cool color. I like having a phone that's a cool color.
Here's what I think is curious about that, is that, yes, I like having, in theory, having a phone that is a cool color, too. And so part of me is sort of like, well, I don't even really mind if my phone is plastic because I'm just going to put a case on it anyway. And then I was like, but if I'm just going to put a case on it anyway...
Do I need it to be a color?
It just could be whatever damn color I want. Yeah. All these people who are, like, obsessing about, like, wanting the gold iPhones and then immediately go put some case with some dumb floral design over it. It's just sort of like, that could be a fuchsia iPhone. I mean, it doesn't
have to... It could be any color.
It could be any color.
It could be clear. I would pay for a clear iPhone.
Yeah, you'd
like
that.
That would be exciting.
Yeah, you've been putting clear cases on your iPhones all over the place.
I know. I've been trying a lot of different cases in the wake of my iPhone accident that I had.
And I also went through a lot of at least early stress and have gotten over it and now sort of fallen in love with it. But the new operating system is also on this.
Yeah, the new operating system.
We
all have that now.
Upgrade to that.
It's very bright.
I really love it.
That's my first reaction was just that I might be blinded by it and not be able to know if it's better or not because I wouldn't be able to see anymore.
Right.
Earlier this week, I told Brent it was going to put me into the blind house.
Oh, yes.
That's a poor house for blind people, in case you're curious. Uh-huh. And that's where I'm going to be because of the new operating system on the iPhone.
I forgot you said that.
But in any case, also, maybe you didn't know this, but we're trying to shut down the government now.
Oh, yes.
Again.
Well, we're not trying to. I was reminded on Meet the Press this morning by Bill Kristol.
Right, we're trying to not.
The Republicans are the only ones who've come up with a plan to fund the government.
Yes.
Like, that's the story that they're peddling. Like, they actually have a plan to fund the government.
Right.
It's not that they're trying to defund it.
It involves defunding an irrelevant program that has nothing to do with funding the government.
They don't want to defund the
government. No, of course not. They just proposed doing that.
Correct.
And now are passing a bill to that effect.
Right.
Yes.
But they don't.
It's not because they wanted to.
No.
It's because they had to.
No, right.
Yes. So basically, in a very bizarre twist, the GOP strategy for defunding Obamacare has become like a very complicated strategy in which the House has to pass a bill like that, you know, that prevents government shutdown but defunds Obamacare, and then the Senate has to
filibuster
the same bill.
Their own bill, because it's a
funding bill, it only requires a simple majority, so they can't filibuster it on the basis of them having 46 people or whatever.
Let me tell you why this has gotten so confusing. And the answer is simple.
Ted Cruz.
Well, Ted Cruz. But it's also, they're making it up as they go.
Yeah, well, they had this brilliant plan,
or so they thought, at the beginning of this, that they were going to pass. Well, and then, like, post-passing it, they had no idea, it's like, well, now what do we do?
Well, this is what happened. They were trying to create, like, a false equivalency between defunding Obamacare and shutting down the government and acting like somehow those two have anything to do with each other in the first place. The issue is that if we shut down the government, Obamacare does not go away. It's already partially funded. Most of the funding has already been allocated through channels that don't get affected by a government shutdown. So, you know, we're talking about, like, tax credits, and we're talking about exchanges that are state-based, and we're talking about things that the federal government does not control in the budgetary process.
Right.
So they decide that they're going to tack they've been trying everything to get rid of Obamacare. So they decide to tack it on to this government funding bill because they love a good government shutdown threat.
Sure. Yeah.
It's their favorite thing to do. Because they don't want to force the Democrats to go forward and then, you know, I mean, they want to force the Democrats to go forward and then be like, oh, well, the Democrats caused the government shutdown, even though we proposed the idea and refused to pass a bill without this irrelevant thing in it,
I know.
Blah, blah, blah. So
now, in their defense, because this is this is the 42nd time that they've done this.
Yes, they're busy.
They're busy. In their defense, this is the best idea of the 42 that they've had.
This is the most creative idea that they've had so
far. And the
That
is, like, sort of has the, it's not going to work, but of the other ones were all just, like, random.
Than the others.
It's more plausible than the others. The other 40 ones were just sort of, like, you know, they all knew as they were doing it they were never going to happen. I think some of them sort of know that this isn't going to work, but, like, I think that they actually think that there is an outside, like, crazy person's chance that, like, this...
The issue is that I feel like they thought of this in the House, and they were like, yes, we're geniuses.
Yeah.
And then it got to the Senate, which has different rules, and they were like, oh.
Ah, damn it.
Damn it. So then they were like, well, how are we going to make sure that this bill... Because basically what can happen is with a simple majority, the Senate can just take out the defunding Obamacare thing.
Right.
They don't have to pass that with the rest of the budget.
No, they can just take out...
They can just take out whatever they want.
Exactly. From an appropriations bill.
Because it's an appropriations bill, and this is just an amendment. So they can remove any amendments that they want. So basically now, the strategy has to be that they basically have to, like, filibuster the resolution to, like, change the rules. They're trying to change the rules so that you need 60 votes to pass the amendment so that they can filibuster the bill with the amendment intact and not have it. Like, it's gotten so complicated.
Right. Which Ted Cruz has said that he'll do. He's all, he'll filibuster whatever he needs to.
Right, well, he can't filibuster this without enough people.
Right.
So he can be talking...
He's not going to have it in the Senate.
No, of course not. This is crazy. There's not enough sort of, like, ire about this in the Senate to cause an actual government shutdown. There is enough in the House. The House has gone off the rails. Everybody knows that. They'll pass anything over there.
Right.
The Senate, they have to be a little bit more responsible because they have slightly broader constituencies, and there's just, like, not enough national support for them to be shutting down the government over right. Obamacare.
Well, and the Senate also sort of, I mean, look, they're still sort of, like, terrible, and there are the people who are sort of, like, willing to go to extremes like Ted Cruz, but sort of recently they have shown sort of, like, a little bit more of a willingness to sort of, like, attempt to get some things done yeah. and maybe sort of, like, not act
well,
like crazy
had
people
to.
All the time.
I
they've
mean,
had to.
They have broader constituencies. They're not able to sort of go back to these crazy pants districts in, right. like, western Iowa where they can just go and talk to mouth breathers and no one else.
Right.
But also, this has become a bit of a problem for the GOP because now it's basically going to force them to eat their own. Because
exactly.
suddenly the sort of lack of movement on this is going to come back on the few Republicans who won't go along with Ted Cruz's plans.
Right.
There are plenty of Republicans in the Senate who don't want to see a government shutdown
right.
and don't think Obamacare is worth risking all
right.
of that.
Right. You're not going to see somebody like John McCain go along with
he
this plan
He is not
or
trying
like you know,
to be
I mean,
the guy
just...
who shut down the government.
No.
That is, he's an establishment guy. He's this
Over
is...
Obamacare by latching himself onto Ted Cruz.
No.
Like,
not when
not
he comes
happen.
From a state that has... decided to accept Medicare money from the bill because
right.
it's entirely old people
right.
and poor people.
Yeah.
Like, no one else lives in Arizona. So that's, he gains nothing from going along with this. But because of this, suddenly it's like these few moderate Republicans who are going to have the entire force of the anti-Obamacare movement come down on them.
Yeah.
Because they're going to suddenly look like the ones who couldn't get this stupid filibuster our own bill plan
right.
to go forward.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz has been all over the news trying to sort of promote this idea, but even Fox News called him out on it this week.
Right.
Because it's such a crazy pants idea that Chris Wallace knew it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and he has, when this doesn't work, he has more crazy pants
oh my
ideas
God, the
on
ideas
the heels of it.
Get crazier.
Yeah. Because if this doesn't work, he's just going to stop funding for the military.
Yeah, he's just
or
gonna,
willing to. He's not going to, but he'll attach the defunding of Obamacare
to
a military
spending
bill.
Yeah, and then he'll be like, then he, you know, he's sort of quoting him. He's getting there are quotes everywhere in which he's talking.
Right.
Sorry, I didn't really get that sentence out, did I? but he's basically sort of promoting the idea that like Harry Reid won't have the nerve to shoot down a military spending bill. You know, if it has, you know, even if it has this
right.
this thing attached to it. And first of all, that's maybe a misunderstanding of where you can hit the Democrats where it hurts. Like, the Democrats are not the ones who need
say.
To worry about defunding the military. If Ted Cruz is the one deciding to attack or to attach an amendment that absolutely can't pass to a military spending bill, he's the one defunding the military, and everyone
yeah,
will know that.
Everybody
that's
knows.
A
yeah.
foolish
that's
idea.
That's why this has not worked out so great for the Republicans in the
no.
past, because, like, everybody sees what they're up to.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're not that clever.
I was going to say, he's not tricking anybody.
No. No one's fooled by this.
No.
But, so, in any case, he sort of can't stop himself, though. It's all he wants to do is go on to
well,
Fox
Well, he doesn't
News.
Want to do anything important.
He doesn't have anything important to
well,
do.
True.
But he's basically, like, every time that he talks about this on air, he comes up with an even stupider plan and a stupider way of explaining
yeah.
what's going on, to the effect that now everyone is aware that it's insane.
Right. Well, and I think also, to a certain degree, the reason that they have become so, I mean, they've been obsessed for a while, but, like, that they have just sort of, like, had this genius plan to do this, like, now with the funding of the government, is that these exchanges start in October.
Yeah, it's getting pretty down to the wire.
It's getting down to the wire, but I think that not only do they want to do it before it starts, I think the main reason that they want to do it before it starts is because they're afraid that it's going to work.
Of course it's going to... No, they have run out of time. Because the exchanges... People are excited about the exchanges.
Yes.
My mom was talking to my cousin, and she was like, she's coming back to New York on the day the exchange opens just to sign up for the exchanges. And that's an online... You don't need to be in New York to sign up for the
oh,
New York
I know.
Exchange. It's online. But she just wants to be here for it. Like,
I know. I'm excited
really
to look
excited.
At the exchanges.
I
mean, I have the worst healthcare insurance like that has ever been created
yeah.
by any healthcare insurance company
yeah.
and given to an employee by a...
Any
know,
other
a,
company.
By any other company. And it's basically being paid for by, you know, coming out of my own paycheck. And it's
exactly.
like, I want to see what's going on
Absolutely.
With the California exchange.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is, people are excited about the exchanges already. When they actually sort of like come out and that sort of press push happens,
right.
they're going to be even more excited.
Right.
There was like this crazy ad that hit the interwebs this week that
yes.
was paid for by a group called Generation Opportunity, which is sort of a youth anti-Obamacare organization
yeah.
of sorts. And it basically, like, depicts Uncle Sam, like, giving this
In
woman...
this weird, like, clown
Like,
head
a clownish
thing,
giant
like,
head Uncle
yeah.
Sam giving a woman, like, a vaginal exam, basically.
Yes.
And then another giving a guy a prostate exam.
Yes.
And very creepy idea.
Yes.
I give them kudos for that.
I agree.
It certainly was creepy enough that I was like, this is suspect and not exactly an accurate yes. situation. Because it's like this nurse and this woman are like walking down the hall and she's like, oh, I see you signed up for Obamacare. And the first thing the girl yes. says is, yes, I finally can come see a doctor. Like,
I know,
like,
which is
her first line is like, right. sells Obamacare already.
I know, exactly.
And then they also, get into the room and the doctor leaves and then Uncle Sam appears. I'm sort of like, listen, if it takes Uncle Sam giving me a fucking, you know, pelvic exam to get right. a doctor's appointment, then I don't fucking care.
Right. Well, and also I just think, you know, besides being creepy, which we've given them kudos for, I think yeah. that, like, there's the one thing that there's still so much confusion about this, which is yeah. sort of annoying me. I
yeah,
was actually
for sure.
on, I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher on Friday night, and he was like, I just don't understand. He sold going to war in Syria so much yeah. better to us than he has been able to sell this thing to
yeah.
us. I was watching this with my roommate, who is, I mean, sometimes more informed than others, but is right. not stupid. He asked me if he had, and they showed a clip of this commercial. He goes, right. do I have to sign up for Obamacare? And I said, that is not a thing.
Yeah, you can't sign up for Obamacare. It's not a plan that,
like,
you sign up
just
for.
Just the fact that, like,
you gotta
ask.
Sort
of, like,
yeah, that's a question that anyone would have.
Right.
Is mind-boggling. And they're specifically, they're worried about how young people specifically are gonna, you know, are going to take the sort of, like, exchange information and whether or not they're going to sign up, because without young people, the system kind of falls apart because they're the ones that are cheap to insure.
You have healthy people.
Yeah. Exactly. You got to have healthy people in the system for it to work. And if the healthy people don't sign up, which is this ad is geared towards them,
yeah.
then the system is kind of a mess. But even if that doesn't happen, I don't see this being the confusion about Obamacare. I know that
well, right.
this is, I think, a misread of, this is a very old argument about, you know, keep the government out of my healthcare kind of argument,
yes.
which we've moved past that.
Yes.
Like, what we learned about the people that were saying that was that they were on Medicare. That's
exactly.
that quote is
totally.
Associated with people who receive Medicare.
Yes. Well, and the other thing that sort of, like, bugged me about this commercial is that it's just sort of like, it has been Republicans over the last few years who have been, like, trying to pass every single law to, like, get their hands inside of
yeah.
women's vaginas.
Like,
I mean,
they're,
like,
passing all these mandatory ultrasound laws. Like, that's actually Uncle Sam, like, looking in your vagina.
Yes.
And that for no reason. For
yes.
nothing.
You're right.
I mean, that, like, if we want to talk about who is responsible for Uncle Sam being
having
in people's
a creepy
vaginas.
Uncle Sam clown in your vagina.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the Republicans.
It would be the Republicans who are
yeah.
responsible for that. No, I know. And this is another reason that I think they just sort of, like, can't win using this argument, is every time that they make it, and especially since the last election cycle when they had so many slip-ups, you know, in,
yes.
you know, in relation to all of this, like, they just sort of can't be taken seriously on this point anymore. The idea of government being in your healthcare and, like,
right.
like peering into your vagina is, like, not a real threat anymore.
No.
It's not a thing people think is happening. Like, they may be concerned that, like, you will be forced to expend money that you can't afford. That's a legitimate concern. You know, there are plenty of concerns with Obamacare that I could see Republicans sort of, like, you know, grasping onto. But the sort of, like, government in your healthcare,
no.
not the problem.
Also, that's not what Obamacare is anyway.
No, exactly.
It's, like, quite the opposite.
It's the exact... I wish that it was more of what Obamacare was about.
Right. If,
like,
that commercial was true,
then
Obamacare would be better than it actually is.
It'd be way
is.
Cheaper if yeah. that commercial was true.
Yeah.
But in any case, this is very exciting. I mean, this is a very exciting time because October 1st is the moment.
Coming
the
up.
The
I've been seeing the covered, I've
yeah.
covered
the California
commercials.
I know.
All over
I get
the
so
place.
Excited when I
know,
see them.
I know, me
this.
Too.
I even saw one of them on Hulu. Which I
oh, that's
felt
where
like,
I've been seeing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before
which,
Jacques and Julia
right.
cooking at home.
Well, those are the only times anyone watches commercials. Oh, yeah, that's when I saw them, too.
I know.
Brett and I have both been watching a lot of Jacques and Julia at home.
I've watched the entire series
right.
now, which is like 20-some episodes. And I finally was like, there were a few that I was like, I don't even think I'm going to watch these because it was like, oh, salmon. I don't even like salmon.
Yeah.
And then I finally just watched it because I was like, well,
here I am.
I have to now.
Yeah.
It's like
I'm committed now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but why are we watching that?
We don't know. I don't know that
I mean,
I've even, like...
I love her. I've seen every episode of The French Chef as
yeah.
well. She and this is
yeah, Brent
sort of like,
went through a period when he got his Kindle, when it was on Amazon Prime or
yeah.
whatever Amazon
yeah.
services, and he just sat at night
yeah.
watching
that's all I did.
Julia Child's
and that's
show.
What I've been doing here, too.
Yeah.
But I like this one because she's sort of, like, getting into, like, her more senile state.
Yes.
Here. I mean, she was always crazy on the front
set. She's, like, doddering and crazy
at this. Like, she scares me with the knife.
Oh, my God.
She's always telling Jacques what he's doing wrong, yeah. or, like, that and she's always claiming that her recipes are not her own and that they're his and that she doesn't like them. And she's, like, always fighting with him about whether she should be using white pepper or black pepper.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't like speckled food, apparently.
No, apparently not. Yeah. I recently saw an episode where she had to ask Jacques because he was holding all the knives on his side so that she wouldn't touch them. Basically, she was like, "Well, if you want me to cut these shallots, I'm going to need a knife, Jacques." Like a really pointed tone. It was
She's
great.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
In any case.
Speaking of food. There's a bunch of people who aren't going to be able to get it anymore.
Yep. The House on Thursday passed a bill that would cut $40 billion in nutrition aid. Which is awesome of them.
Food stamps.
Food stamps, yeah. I mean it's making a big cut to the food stamp program.
$40 billion.
It was like this bill that was like sort of tied to a farm bill, and it's kind of confusing what's happening with that.
Yeah.
There's some people in the House that are desperate to pass a more, you know, a broader farm bill.
Yes.
And because of that, they've sort of gone along with this plan in an effort to get the GOP people to come along with their farm bill plans.
Right.
Because, you know, they sort of are more concerned about, I mean, they're from farm states, obviously,
right.
and they're more concerned about the agricultural aid elements of what would be this sort of food bill in general. So because of that, there's a bunch of people who are not advocating for the food stamp program who probably would still vote to support it if they had to, you know, if it wasn't tied to this other issue.
Well, and the vote was not necessarily along strict party lines. I mean, it was 217 to 210, and the Republicans have a much bigger majority than that. So some of the Republicans did not vote for this, which is sort of heartening, to a degree.
This is, I think, a little extreme. And it, especially because of the type of rhetoric that they were tossing around when talking about it, they dragged that welfare queen, like, idea out of the freaking grave.
Right, back from the 90s.
Back from the 90s, like, more than I've ever seen them. You know, they do this from time to time, periodically, to talk about how lazy poor people are. That's their thing. But they sort of, like, literally, Fox News had made this little package about this guy, Jason, in California, who was on food stamps and was just hanging out and surfing in California and not looking for work because he was a lazy guy and he didn't care about jobs and he only, you know, was just milking the government program. And they, you know, Fox News made sure everyone in the House saw it. And then when they were sort of, like, talking about the bill, like, at, you know, during the session, they started talking about Jason. Like, they kept referencing Jason, being like, we don't want to be in a nation of Jasons and things like that that were just sort of, like, crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's like saying, oh, she's on welfare and she drives a Cadillac. It's the exact same image.
Which is, I mean, it's just so upsetting to me because, like, the majority of the people who are getting this assistance are the working poor, they're the elderly, they're disabled people, they're children. They're basically all groups of people who either are working and are poor or who can't work.
Well,
kids
and
elderly and
disabled
people.
What's been frustrating about this is the way that they've tried to, like, draw this weird parallel between people not working and needing food stamps. Because a lot of people who are on food stamps do work.
Yes.
That's a frustrating thing. We could raise the minimum wage and maybe prevent that from happening, but we aren't doing that. Like, I have had a lot of issues with the way that the government runs one of their AmeriCorps programs, VISTA, which is a program where, you know, they sort of, like, it's like a grant and they pay for you to go work at a nonprofit or in a community-related job. And I had a bunch of friends that did it after college.
Yeah.
The annual income for it is, like, something like $10,000 a year. And they encourage you to apply for food stamps while you're on the program.
Yeah, because I think it's if you're under $14,000 or $15,000, I think that's what it is.
And it's part of it is like, oh, you have to see what the communities that you're serving live like or whatever. But I've always been like, if our own government is sponsoring a program that requires you to be on food stamps, then, like, we have messed up priorities about who and, like, who is on food stamps, why they're on food stamps. Like, if we don't understand that and we're like, sponsoring a program for young people that encourages them to apply, then we should know why people go on food stamps.
Yes.
That shouldn't be difficult for us to figure out.
Well, and the other thing that is, like, so upsetting about this is that for the people who are not working and are on food stamps, there are not necessarily jobs for those people.
Exactly.
I mean,
and certainly not jobs that will pay enough so that they don't have to have food stamps.
And the Republicans certainly haven't passed a jobs bill.
No, exactly.
So if the Republicans want to pass a jobs bill and then tie work requirements to getting food stamps, then I still probably would be really pissed about it. Right. But I would potentially be more apt to listen.
Well, and part of what they're responding to is the fact that enrollment, like, doubled since the recession started.
Well,
but, like, we're
yeah.
in a fucking recession.
Right.
So, of course, enrollment doubled. That's why we have a food stamp program.
Right.
So that in a recession, everyone doesn't
it's
starve.
It's a social safety net program.
Exactly.
For when you have a recession.
Yeah.
It exists for the time that we live in currently.
Exactly.
That's why we have this program.
But, you know, if we're going to act like it's being overused all of a sudden because of a recession that was caused by a bunch of rich guys on Wall Street, P.S., then we really, like, aren't really taking seriously what the purpose of the program is in the first place, which is not, it's not like you can be like, well, we'll just help 5% of the population and that will always be it. There'll never be more than 5% of the population that needs help or whatever, you know, whatever logic they're using to sort of justify all of this in their heads. And it's also not a question of whether or not people are looking for work or trying to work. It doesn't do favors for anyone in society if people are starving. It increases crime. It increases a bunch of other social ills that even working people don't want to deal with.
Of course.
So even if every single person on food stamps was literally sitting on their couch, like, staring at a television, not working and not caring, it would be better for us to provide them with food stamps than it would be for us to just let them do that and then have them steal food from our houses because they had nothing to eat.
Right.
Like, it just doesn't... It's like, even on a social level, it doesn't make any sense to feel that way. And it... I mean, any sort of welfare queen rhetoric really, like, gets my goat. Because it's just like...
Yeah.
We should be over that by now. I know that we've, like, already cut every welfare program so extensively since the 90s that, like, we don't even... Or since the 80s, even. I mean, that's when that first came... That was when
that
first came up.
And we're still going... Mitt Romney ran on that. Remember? He did those commercials that were just sort of, like, not even...
It's just, like...
True, but...
It's just sort of, like, this infuriating line that never seems to go away. And in this case, it's sort of set up this weird issue in the Senate where the House passed this bill, but the Senate's version of the bill is, like, tied to a farm bill or something like that. So
it's
going to have to go to committee, and I don't think the White House is going to sign this version, the $40 million in cuts version.
Yeah.
But the fact that that's where the House's minds are even at is just, like, infuriating. It's, as I've now said, like, 17 times. meanwhile, though, a lot of the people that are supporting this bill because it's tied to this farm bill situation are getting huge agricultural subsidies from the federal government.
Of course they are.
They're all from states that get all this money from us for, like, factory farms, essentially, for, like, big agribusiness.
Yes.
So, like, they can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, agreed.
But in any case, there was this sort of, like, weird moment on Facebook where one of the representatives from North Dakota who supported this bill was asked by somebody about, you know, his support of the bill or whatever, and he quoted this Bible passage that basically says something like, if anyone's not willing to work, let him eat. Or let him not eat.
Right.
Which doesn't even reference that in the Bible. In the Bible, they're talking about how people who aren't willing to work the fields in an agricultural setting shouldn't eat because they didn't do
the work to sow
the food. That's a very different situation than what we're talking about right here.
Also,
but I love it. Just let them not. Who cares if they eat?
Also,
let them starve.
Jesus talked about the poor. There are more references to the poor from Jesus than he loved nobody more than the poor people.
Yeah, he wanted to live like them.
He did not like rich people, and he loved poor people.
Yeah,
he was real into poor people.
Super into them. Probably understood that sometimes your job doesn't make ends meet.
Thought they should eat.
Yeah, probably
fed a lot of them himself.
Exactly.
Matter of fact.
Had
some magic going on with some of the said feedings, where
right,
he was sort of multiplying some fish. But, I mean, it happened.
The point is that symbolically,
yes,
at least,
he wanted to feed the poor.
He wanted to feed the poor. That was one of his aims as a potentially fictional historical figure that everyone is following to the word. But the idea that anyone would even quote a Bible passage that makes it sound like they don't care if their constituents will eat or not is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And this was from Representative Kevin Cramer, who represents a state that I think got $10.4 billion in farm aid.
Ugh.
Between 2005 and 2012. Like, they get more farm aid than anyone else in the nation.
And a lot of that farm aid, and I know this because I know people who are getting farm aid, some of that farm aid is paying you to not farm.
Yeah. A lot of
paying family farmers to not plow their land that year, basically.
Yeah.
And those same people are oftentimes the people who are like, oh yeah, food stamps, welfare queens. It's like, well,
you're literally
taking
being paid to
money
not work.
To not do anything.
Yeah.
fuckers. Anyway.
If you were reading a newspaper this week, you might have wondered why we led with this story, because you would have only found out one thing, which is that there was a shooting at a Navy Yard in Washington.
Yes.
And 12 people, well, 13 people died. One was the gunman, though. He shot 12 people.
Yeah.
It was one of several shootings that occurred in the last week that that had around the same number of victims.
Yes.
There was one in Chicago as well. There's one in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
In a little while, we're going to talk about Obama speaking on those issues.
Yeah.
But this one got a lot of press because it was unexpected, for one. It was on military property. And it was just fucking bonkers.
Yeah, it was really bonkers. And I have to be honest, part of the other reason that I didn't want to necessarily lead with the story is because I, and this sounds terrible, but like, I have stopped sort of caring about these shootings.
Yeah.
Until after the last one, it was so disheartening what we decided not to do, sort of like in the wake of it.
Well, right.
That until we
You're just setting yourself up for emotional failure.
Until we can sort of like have like a constructive like discussion about what we're going to be able to do that is actually going to do something about this, I just sort of like, oh, another shooting.
Yeah, well, another.
Which is a terrible state to be in. Like, I don't like that I'm in that state.
But I mean, we're talking about a week where three of these happened.
Yes.
Like, we're not talking, like, this is just, like, happening constantly.
Yes.
There's no way to keep up with it.
No.
And this one made the news part, you know, just because it was a military thing.
Right, it was, yes.
And that those
always
make the
news.
It was on a Navy yard. No one knows what a Navy yard is.
No.
Is it a yard that houses the Navy? Or do they have ships in the yard? Is there water in the yard? Are there boats at all? Are they on blocks? On cinder blocks?
I don't know.
People work in a building in the Navy yard? Nobody knows what it is.
No.
And when I read, I was looking it up, and the only thing that I could find is that it used to be a shipyard. I don't even know what a shipyard is.
No. Well,
none of these things are things that I know, but somehow this guy went to the fourth floor of a building. So there's four-story buildings
on the
Navy Yard.
Also, his name is Aaron Alexis. It sounds like a female porn name, by the way.
That's,
sounds like he should be starring in something with Sydney Leathers.
Maybe that is why he was having a long history of anger problems.
Perhaps.
Because
he was saddled with a porn name.
Exactly. They think it might have been some sort of like workplace-related thing because he went and shot the people that he worked with first, and he could have shot any number of people along the way to get there. But his backstory makes you wonder who is doing background checks on the contractors that we hire to go into these situations and work on in our military bases.
Right. Because, well, nobody.
Nobody. because if anyone had done any checking into his background, they would have found a series of bonkers incidents that sounded suspiciously like this neighbor that I used to have. Brent remembers, because I had to spend several nights on his couch, that I had this neighbor who lived next door to me who thought people were out to get him. He was an ex-Marine, I think, and he was having terrible PTSD issues, I think, was what it was. But one day at 5 a.m., just started screaming help out the window. And so I called the police. P.S. I was the only person to call the police. I wonder about my neighbors a lot because of that. I was the only... But so the police show up. Obviously, nothing is going on.
Right.
And then for the next 2 weeks, he just starts calling the police all the time. He says people are trying to tunnel into his apartment. People are trying to come in from the roof. They have search party helicopters, like search helicopters circling our building. Like, all of this craziness is going on. Like, I open my door periodically and there would be policemen, like five in a row with their guns out, like coming down my hallway and things like that.
Right.
And it turned out that he was having some sort of breakdown.
Yes.
And that it sounded a lot like what was going on here, where this guy...
And this guy had gun incidents
gun incidents in the past. He was a Navy reservist, and he had been seeing someone at the Department of Veterans Affairs because he hadn't been sleeping, and he'd been having these weird paranoid incidents where he, like, at one point, he, like, poured sugar into someone's car because of some reason that he thought they were out to get him. At one point, he was staying at a Marriott in Rhode Island, and this was only 40 days before the shooting actually took place, and he called the police because he said that he was hearing voices coming through the ceiling and that they were out to get him.
Yes.
So he was having a lot of issues that were taken together would have been very clear signs of mental illness of some sort.
Yeah.
And it's just like nobody kind of put them together, and the company that he was contracted with didn't look into it or didn't know.
Right.
Which is worrying.
It is worrying. But this is the thing about what you talk about when you're like, well, you know, crazy people shouldn't have guns. And while, yes, that is true, but...
They're only crazy if you find out they're crazy. You can only...
And you find out they're crazy usually after they shoot someone. Now, we can sort of talk about whether we would have, should have known that he was crazy, right, because perhaps we should have. But that is sort of...
But he's also not committed a crime by calling the police and hearing voices. They don't know if he actually heard voices or not, and if those voices were real.
Right, exactly. And that's what I sort of like, because they were talking to Wayne LaPierre this morning on Meet the Press, and they said, you know, what would you have done? And he was like, well, this person should have been institutionalized. And I was like,
yeah, but we had a mental health system that could identify those individuals and put them in an institution.
Yes, and I agree that this person, if he was hearing voices and was potentially schizophrenic or whatever, should have been in an institution. But a lot of the people who have go out and do mass killings are sort of, until the mass shooting, just sort of like vaguely depressed.
Yeah.
Those people should not be in an institution.
No. They should be prevented from having their breakdown with a gun.
With a gun. And you can't just round up all the people who may or may not potentially shoot someone and put them in an institution. Like, that just doesn't, that doesn't pass the sort of like logic test of like any human being.
Absolutely
not. I mean,
And hidden in this story was a little gem that does wonders for my side work as an advocate for 9/11 victims.
Oh yes.
Because this guy, Alexis, or Aaron Alexis, it's hard because he has two first names. It's so confusing.
Right, and they're both female names.
They're both female, he used to work at Borough of Manhattan Community College, which was right next to the high school that I went to. Mm-hmm. On 9/11, we were all three blocks from the World Trade Center, and he was was walking to work on the day, like the rest of us were all down there. And a lot of people think that he was suffering really bad PTSD symptoms from that event. It wasn't, because he was a Navy reservist. He wasn't like, he didn't do like 75 tours in Iraq or anything like that. But he'd been having PTSD symptoms because of this event. This is why you provide disaster victims with some sort of healthcare option.
Health funds. Yeah, exactly.
Because you want to be able to identify what people are going to maybe turn a PTSD issue because of a terrible experience during a major national tragedy into a shooting in a Navy yard. And he had had a history of anger issues already. A lot of his friends said, you know, a lot of his friends were interviewed, and it turns out that he'd been having these issues for years.
Yeah.
But I found it interesting that he also managed to be working right next door to where I was already, you know, where I returned on October 9th. BMCC returned even earlier than we did, so he was there for, like, the brunt of it. Not just the event itself, but the cleanup
right
process, which in that area was actually pretty terrible.
Terrible.
But so in any case, this also makes a great argument for why you want to provide health services to 9/11 victims and other disaster victims.
Yeah.
Because...
So they don't shoot a bunch of people.
So they don't shoot a bunch of people later in a Navy yard, whatever that is.
Are you going to do that?
I hope not.
I hope not.
I mean, I've never held a gun, so it would be a weird turn of events for me.
Yeah.
Potentially not capable of it, because I wouldn't know how to I wouldn't know how to take the safety off of a gun. I'm surprised I know that they have safeties in the first place. There's everyone in LA, because I think a lot of people are from sort of like ruralish and suburban communities, is always trying to get me to go to shooting ranges.
Everybody's
going to shooting ranges here. And I literally could not have less of a desire to go to a shooting range. And everyone is always like, but
it's so fun.
And you'll learn how to like fire a gun. And like,
I don't want to know. I can kill somebody with that.
Exactly. If there's one thing that firing a gun will allow you to do that you can't do easily without knowing how to fire a gun, it's murder someone with a gun.
Yeah. Or a lot of people.
Once you know how to fire a gun, that's the first obstacle to having a mass shooting happen during your breakdown.
Yeah.
Taken care of.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I'm not interested, friends.
No.
But in any case, this incident got a lot of press, considering that it didn't really have a motive or, like, any sort of narrative that we could work with.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like one of those shootings where you're like, oh, the army treated him this way, and he was closeted, and he, you know, whatever, you know, whatever usually, you know, are the moments that someone totally betrays the military.
Crazy dude showed up and, like started shooting people.
Some guy being crazy decided to shoot everyone in sight.
Yep.
And, you know, there were, like we said, a bunch of smaller shootings that happened, one in Chicago and D.C. So Obama started talking about it.
I mean, any sort of mass shooting is obviously, I mean,
like, Chicago already
tragic.
Has so much gun violence.
And this one was just sort of like, they think it was gang-related.
Yeah.
It was like 12 or 13 people, like, on a basketball court, like, at night, basically.
Yeah.
There was a three-year-old. I mean, that hurts my heart more than the other one does. I mean, not to say that, you know, people's lives have more meaning than others. But, I mean, like, that is just sort of like a more tragic story that sort of nobody cared about.
Yeah, no one reported on that until Obama decided to speak on it.
Yeah.
But he's, I think, about to start pushing for gun legislation again. We'll see he gets anywhere. I'm sure he won't, because we can't even keep the government open without defunding Obamacare these days. So it's impossible to know whether anyone at all thinks that guns are a problem.
Nobody has any political capital to do anything, I don't think. And certainly he doesn't have it on guns. I mean, he couldn't even... They sort of have already stalled on immigration. I mean, he's not going to be able to get guns done. I mean, there was actual will to do immigration, and it still is not going to get done. There's no will to get guns done. I mean,
I don't understand. And I think that there could be will to get guns done if there was... If someone could figure out the, like, magic press formula to, like, reactivate people about this. There are just so many stories of mass shootings that to draw from.
You know,
Newtown is one thing. That, you know, was a moment where that could have happened. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you knew, but Ray Ray is with us today.
Hey!
Ray Ray. But in any case, I don't think that it necessarily... Because, you know, outlets like Huffington Post and other sort of progressive online news sources have been constantly... reporting on these issues of gun, you know, these gun violence moments and events, I feel like there's so much to draw on that there is probably a way to get people activated in a very, like, present sense on this issue.
I think
it's just, like, I don't know what the formula is.
I don't either. And I think to a certain degree, like, I mean, I think people are just becoming so numb to it. I mean, it really is just,
well, it's
like
you were
so,
saying, you hear about this Navy Yard shooting, and I was like, oh, another shooting.
Yeah, it's getting monotonous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sort of like, you almost don't even have, like, the I don't know, wherewithal to even sort of, like, discuss it anymore. It's just
upsetting. It seems like if enough months pass where these shootings keep happening and your life stays the same, there's, like, sort of no incentive for you to feel activated about it. This is what I think they could focus on that, you know, could potentially activate people. I think there's some sort of thing that could, like, unlock people's, like, sort of individual sense of danger about this issue, because I feel like every time I hear about one of these, I feel like a personal sense of danger, because random acts of violence are fucking scary.
But don't you think that would have happened with it being children, though? I mean, I thought that was it.
I think that because we were so focused on the sort of, because that was a very, like, tragic situation, but, like, most of us don't spend all day in school. Most of us sort of, like, have the freedom to, like, associate with whoever we want to associate with, and, like, I think that adults have a sense of, like, sort of agency that kids don't have. So when you see a bunch of kids stuck in that situation, it's tragic because they were literally required to be in school.
Right.
I mean, that's why, you know, that to make another parallel to the 9/11 situation, that is why I think that students who were stuck down in Lower Manhattan during the cleanup have a different kind of argument to make about how they were mistreated than adults.
Right, you could not go.
We didn't have the agency to decide not to go to school because we were minors. And that's, I think, you know, when adults see children in a shooting situation, they're sort of like, well, I'm not a kid. I would have run out or whatever.
That's what makes it tragic.
Exactly.
But
that's why people don't identify.
Yeah.
I think that when, though, you see, like, people, I think that that's why people reacted to this event differently, is because they were like, oh, I could be shot in the workplace. Like, some guy could just walk into my workplace and shoot me because he doesn't like me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a joke people make in the workplace all the time.
I know, right?
With ex-employees. That's constantly getting referred to. That
yeah.
jokes are abounding in every office in America about what ex-employee is going to come and shoot up the place.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is maybe why this is slightly different and why there's maybe, like, a narrative to create out of this that connects with people individually. But I just sort of, like, don't know what the moment, like, what the thing that you need to say is to make people be like, oh, today we have to do something about it. Let me call my congressman.
Right.
Of course, you have no congressman to call anymore because everyone's a loony bag.
Totally.
So that's a problem. So Obama's sort of talking about background checks again. I wish that we could talk about something more extensive than that.
Right.
I wish that we could talk about an assault weapons ban again,
P.S.,
because I wish that even more than background checks, we could just get a lot of the weapons that allow these mass shootings to take place, like, off the streets entirely, so that crazy and non-crazies alike could avoid using them.
This would be a good time to direct you to our hilarious Tumblr entry about our gun control.
Yeah, we have a gun control platform, if you will.
Yeah, we do.
We wrote it a while ago.
Told you to go to our Tumblr page, and now we're telling you again because it was after Newtown. Yeah, exactly.
And you may not be surprised to hear what some of our prescriptions are, but I think that we come up with some creative solutions to the gun issue.
Yes, there are solutions out there.
Solutions you won't hear anywhere else.
Yeah, check it out.
Meanwhile, speaking of shootings, Nairobi had a really scary mall shooting, like American style. It started sounding like an American style shooting until it turned out that it was an Al Qaeda linked group that was taking people hostage in the mall. So it's not quite an American style mall shooting.
I feel like this would scare people in America because everybody loves to go to the fucking mall.
I know. Well, and this this was a location that was chosen by this group specifically for its symbolic value.
Yes.
So I mean, that's the mall is sort of like the symbol of American culture abroad. I actually used to write this blog that I don't write anymore, but you could check out this entry because I think it's pretty genius, called Driving While Genius. And I wrote an entry about being in a mall in Lebanon and how oddly international an experience going to a mall is, and how sometimes when you're in a foreign country, going to a mall is like the only American thing that you really feel like you can connect with, because you sort of understand the rules in a mall are international. You understand the culture of a mall. Like, there's no haggling in a mall. Everyone is sort of like, look, you know, it's clean in malls. If yes. Everyone is sort of like there for, you know, for consumerism's sake. Like, right. there's well, sort of international mall culture.
Well,
that
and
you
I
abide
saw
by.
The footage of this, like with people like running out of it and things like that. And it's sort of, you know, it just looked like a mall.
It looks like any old mall.
Like,
and
I don't know if I was expecting like some sort of like open air like hut market or something or what.
Right.
But like,
no,
I don't know what I was, but
about
it really
this.
Looked.
For the
Looks
first
like
time, I for the first time that I thought about this, I was in Brazil, and we drove through like favelas for miles to get to this mall. Those are like shanty towns in Brazil, and we get to this mall, and it's like surrounded by armed guards. P.S. But like everyone in there was rich, and it was like it looked just like an American mall. It had all the same stores. There was like a Claire's there. There were like all of these stores.
There was a Claire's?
There was a Claire's. Oh, there were all of these stores that you don't just associate with, like, American consumer culture, but you associate specifically with mall culture. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of international malls are a little more high-end than what we have here. But it's – there's something about the mall that is sort of, like, the sort of absolute kind of perfect symbol of globalization and of the spread of American yeah. culture specifically. And so when you see an American-style mall having a shooting and hostage situation,
yeah.
that sort of – for me, I mean, that's why I put this story on it. It was a big story this week, but we don't normally report on these types of incidents right. abroad because we like to focus on local, on national news. But this felt to me very national because...
It did. Well, and it also, I mean...
Can you imagine being taken hostage at the mall?
No. And, like, 68 people have died. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot
it's,
of people.
It's a
I mean,
bloodbath. And as we're recording, they're sending in military forces.
Right.
They had sort of gotten the rebels to kind of, like... Just saying, they were like on one half of one floor by the time that we started recording, but I think they probably at this point have had some sort of horrible blowout.
Yeah.
This is a Somali group that was, trying to sort of like, I think, kind of make a point in an unexpected location for a reason. I don't think Kenya is normally where you go as a Somali to have a terrorist attack,
right.
But this is an Al Qaeda linked Somali group. So, yeah. In any case, that was happening as well. So people are just shooting each other left, right, and center at the moment. It's a yeah. real bloodbath. And that's the end of our shooting talk.
Yes.
So now we can talk about things where people don't die.
Right.
Hillary 2016.
Lila and I were talking earlier today that we are hell-bent on becoming, like, the experts on the anti-Hillary Clinton
America's go-to sources on why Hillary Clinton should not run in 2016.
We want to be who people... Put yep. in a call to.
CNN, when you suddenly realize that Hillary Clinton should not run for president in 2016, we want to be your first calls. Because we've been peddling it longer than anyone.
Right. We have the answers.
Yeah, we have all the
we've
answers.
We've been writing about this. I said to Lila earlier, I was like, we were writing about this before it was popular. And I was like, it's actually still not popular.
Right.
we're still writing about it.
Right. Yeah, and exactly. It's still not popular. No, right. Although I find that in actual, like, sort of everyday life, more people are receptive to this idea than not. It's the kind of thing that, like, a few kind of political people have really grasped on to Hillary Clinton 2016. So they, yeah. like, don't want to let go of that. But when you talk to sort of, like, casual observers, a lot of them are like, yeah, all right, I could see that.
Well, and even actually this morning, I was sort of shocked because, like, I was watching Meet the Press, and Bill Kristol, who I don't necessarily like, but they were talking about this article that we're about to talk about
right.
that was about Hillary Clinton, and they asked her about whether she was going to run in 2016, and she gave some vague answer about yeah. how she doesn't have
the
to
news
decide
that we're
yet,
about to report to you, P.S., is nothing.
Boring, but...
There's no news. She may or may not run. End of news. Continue.
Yes. And he said, they were all, of course, you know, talking about her coronation, if she does decide to run, and that the Democrats don't have anybody else who could run if she
right.
doesn't run, and the usual things that you hear about this.
Right.
And much to my surprise, Bill Kristol said, I don't necessarily like her chances in a Democratic primary against someone who we aren't even talking about
yeah.
that may be like some sort of like Midwestern populist. And Lila and I have been talking for basically
ever.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
That
Since the moment she was being christened as the next great president.
That if someone like who had that sort of like populist message ran, that they could give her a run for her money.
Absolutely.
And so I was like, that was the first sort of like real person that I had heard say that.
Yeah.
And I got really excited. I was watching with my parents, who I was having this very same discussion with yesterday. I threw my hands in the air, and they, of course, sort of rolled their eyes, but they knew exactly what I was talking about.
You had to do a victory dance.
24 hours previously, I had said the exact same thing to them. So we are having Bill Kristol's thoughts before he has them, by the way.
Well, he's having our thoughts after we
have them. Right.
He's a thought thief. But yeah, so Hillary gave an interview, and Bill also was talking to the press this week about how they don't know if she's running or not, or
they
whatnot. They know for sure, obviously, but I think even she maybe has a sense that she doesn't have good chances in a real primary, because if she didn't learn that lesson from her 2008 experience, like, if she didn't learn that lesson from having Barack Obama come out of absolutely nowhere to, like, surge ahead of her at the exact right moment, then she shouldn't, I mean, then she hasn't learned from her campaign at all, and she shouldn't even be talking about 2016.
I agree.
It's just sort of, it seems like they're hedging because they're waiting for someone to come out of the woodwork.
I think that she just actually, she's nothing if not smart.
Right.
And I think that she may see this writing on the wall and still run and sort of try and run that style of campaign. And that would sort of, like, maybe endear her to me a little bit more, but I would not be able to believe it.
Well, I also, like, that's what, I don't think, just, she's not in a position to have us fall for it. You know, our next story is about how the Clintons have now endorsed de Blasio for the New York City mayor's race. And they sort of did it kind of in a lackluster, not very interested way. But I mean, I think someone like de Blasio, who was not as populist as he was, you know, as he was in the race, like, only a few months ago, was able to, because he was not a well-known enough brand to New Yorkers to kind of have already sullied his reputation as a populist.
Right.
Hillary Clinton is a well-known brand. The Clintons in general are a well-known brand. They redefined what Democratic politics mean. There's no way that they get out there with a populist message and fool anybody into thinking that that's what they stand for.
Right.
They don't.
And
any vaguely populist person in a primary with her has so many things to pull from to prove that they don't, that it's like not even a smart argument.
Yeah.
They're going to try to go with the Christine Quinn argument. They're going to try to go with, we know how to get stuff done because we know people. And, like, that didn't work for...
Well, it's already not worked once.
It's already not worked once. And it didn't work for Mitt Romney when he thought of it. Like, it doesn't work for anybody.
No, it's not a winning strategy.
No, people don't care if you know everyone.
It's
obnoxious to say that. It makes you sound like some douchebag popular girl from high school.
Yeah.
But in any case, the Clintons have now endorsed de Blasio, so all is well in the Democratic world. We've all rallied.
Yes, they did it in, like, a 48-word, like, little, like, email blast that was sort of, you know, like, one little short, like, two sentences, basically.
Yeah.
And they did it a couple days after Andrew Cuomo, so they sort of,
they were
like,
fine, we'll do it.
Yeah,
the Cuomos are doing it, we can do it. De Blasio said they both offered extraordinarily helpful advice, and I was sort of like, I hope you're not going to take it.
I know.
Like, that's the last thing.
He said, I'm proud to come from the Clinton family.
Like, what does that mean?
Well,
are they
know.
In a cult that we don't...
I don't know.
They're in a cult.
Sort of like a mob family or something? Is that what it is?
Yeah,
like the Clinton mob?
They are. Remember that article that we were talking about with the Clinton Foundation a few weeks ago?
Oh, yeah.
They're actually a mob. They're, like, threatening people who are not part of their mob.
Right.
Like, if you somehow, like, run sort of from their wishes. What am I trying? There's a mob analogy that I was trying to use.
Yeah, sure.
But I lost it because I don't know enough about mob analogies.
That's what I was just about to say, too. I was like, you're going to come to me for a mob analogy?
In any case.
You're not going to get it.
If you run afoul of the, Clintons, that's not a mob analogy, but it works for my purposes.
Yeah.
Then they come down on you as a group, even if you run afoul of one of them. So there we have it. Running afoul, the new mob analogy, christened by me. Meanwhile, Anthony Weiner gave a sort of hilarious interview to his first interview post-election to Geraldo Rivera.
And I was reading this article, and I realized when I got to the very end of it, at least why I think that he probably gave it to Geraldo, because they sort of joked at the end of the interview that Geraldo said, took the heat off my selfie. So basically, they're like selfie brothers.
Yeah, they're brothers in poorly thought out Twitter photo taking.
So anyway, but he gave this 20-minute interview where he basically just like declared that he was not an idiot, and he was like, you know, I know that the sort of like more recent allegations and or not even allegations, like they weren't allegations, they were facts.
They
happened. hurt my campaign. It's sort of like, oh, no. Wow.
Glad you
you're
know
a real
that.
Fucking yeah. genius.
But then he also sort of blamed the fact that his name is Wiener on most of it, which, to be fair, was part
doesn't
of the
help.
Appeal. Doesn't help. But a guy whose name is Anthony Wiener should...
You have to be prepared for things
probably
like this.
Know that he shouldn't get involved in sex scandals.
I'm sure he grew up getting made fun of it, so he probably
totally
knew
to it.
Well, but he knew, you know, the fun that was going to be had with it. I mean,
right.
It wasn't.
It's
it shouldn't have come as like some sort of shock that like they were, you know,
yeah,
we're going to be Wiener jokes.
No way. Made. And then Rivera suggested that he take Huma Abedin's last name, but he said, "No, I love my name."
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Well, you're stuck.
Exactly. But in any case, we have some slightly sort of depressing backtracking news on the gay rights front.
Yes. Gay news. We haven't had gay news in a while.
Yeah.
Usually we were on like an every week.
Yeah. For a while, it's all we talked about.
Yeah.
Now we're sort of in an era of trying to screw over the poor.
Yeah.
So we've sort of, you know, we've changed focuses a little bit.
Right. We're in a post homophobic era.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. As we know, as we can tell from Russia's example and many others.
Yes, exactly.
And this example, which is that Raul Labrador, a lover of gays if ever there was one,
yes.
Is proposing a bill that would basically like allow you to discriminate against same-sex couples because as part of like a sort of like vaguely
religious.
Freedom-y.
Yeah.
If your religion allows you to discriminate against black people, you're not legally allowed to go around discriminating against black people the civic world.
Right.
That's not allowed. And by the same token, you're not allowed to decide that just because you don't like gay marriage that you're allowed to discriminate against gays for ideological reasons.
Right.
That's why we have the Constitution, is to protect crazies from thinking that that could possibly be the case.
Yes. Well, Raul Labrador, one of the crazies.
One of the crazies, if ever there was one.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I included a story that is not a political news story at all.
Right.
But I only included it because I have some personal stories that I want to tell that are relevant.
Lila was telling me about this earlier. She was like, I put this story in about such and such, and I was like, okay. Sounds great.
So basically, this Connecticut couple is really furious because their daughter was taken on a field trip to something called Nature's Classroom, which is in Charlton, Massachusetts, and there was, like, this activity that they did where they were, like, sort of supposed to kind of get a firsthand taste of what it would have been like in slave times.
Oh.
And this is an African-American little girl that this happened to, so this makes it even worse.
Yeah, sure.
But basically, the students are brought into a dark room and then lined up and then asked to imagine, like, watching their fathers be killed by slave masters. And then
how old are these kids?
They were, I think, in, like, fourth grade or something.
Oh, my
God. Like, it was, like, little kids.
12-year-olds.
Yeah. So maybe a little older. more like seventh graders.
Yeah, still.
But anyway, so then they're asked to sort of mimic life on a slave ship. Like, they're sort of, like, asked to sit closely together and that, you know, they're not allowed to use the bathroom and, you know, stuff like that. And then at one point, there was a racial slur used to kind of show them what it would have been like,
okay.
I guess. The reason I included this story is, and I totally understand why these parents would have an issue with, like, the N-word being used
to
their little, like, daughter in seventh grade on a school field trip. Apparently, you know, they were given the option of opting out of this activity, but only a half hour before the activity, they didn't really know what it was going to entail.
Didn't know what it was, yeah.
And she's sort of like, well, what kind of messages does this send to my daughter, who is, like, a young African-American woman in this society? So, you know, this is not sort of like an activity that necessarily, like, affirms her, you know, her sort of, like, self-confidence in any way.
No, not at all.
The reason I included it is because this happened to me twice in two different schools when I was in elementary and middle school.
I didn't even know this was a thing.
My mom was furious about this, even though I'm not an African-American person,
I'm sure.
Because it was just sort of like a disturbing experience, you know, entirely. And it was both in like two very sort of like PC schools where they, I guess this is like a common thing that schools were trying at a certain period when I was growing up. Where
apparently
you were,
it was and
some,
now
some real interactive education going on, but this is something. This is like never a winning strategy ever because you can't actually ask a bunch of like seventh graders to fully understand what it meant to be a slave by like abusing them in the classroom. So the first time that it happened to me, we were all ushered into this corner where there was, and this was still, I think this was maybe in third grade. So, like, we were really little and we still had, like, a story area for, like, when we would have, like, class story time or whatever. We all got ushered into a corner. And
turned
like,
into the slave area.
It turned into the slave area. Someone was, like, threatening us with a broom and people were screaming and, like, you know, the teacher was screaming at us and everyone was, like, panicking. And that was, like, at this very sort of, like, hippy-dippy progressive school that I was going to. The second time that it happened, though, it was worse. I was in, and this was in a public school. The first time it happened was in a private school. My mom was furious. She complained. There were only a few kids in my class. Like, everyone complained. Second time it happened was in a public school, and we got told to lie down on desks and got our hands and feet tied together by another student and then screamed at.
Bonkers.
And then I obviously panicked like a person and then got screamed at and yelled and sent out of the room.
Well, you were being a bad slave.
Yeah, I was being a bad slave, which I don't know that many middle school students make a good slave.
No, probably not.
That's not the right age to teach them about.
Wouldn't be the highest
how to be a good
seller.
Slave. No, definitely not. But I am shocked to hear that this strategy is still being used as a way to teach people about slavery. I'm appalled that it would be attempted on a school trip where the students weren't even in their school and were sort of, like, in this weird environment already.
Well, and I just also think that, like, you could accomplish sort of the same thing without... I mean, you can... It sounds like they sort of, like, asked them to imagine these things. And sort of, like, you could continue to ask them to imagine these things. You could even say, imagine people screaming at you the N-word. Like, you just sort of, you can walk them through sort of, like, the things as this opposed to doing them to them, like, in a very sort of, like, offensive and, like, sort of terrifying way.
Terrifying. I mean, it was always terrifying. Every time that it happened, it was terrifying. And it, also, it doesn't really give you a sense of what it would have been to be a slave.
Well, obviously. I mean, duh.
What it does, though, is it creates a weird social hierarchy within the classroom because someone always got picked to be the slave master. Okay. In those experiments.
Right.
And so because of that, it suddenly becomes... And kids don't really understand...
And the white kids and the black kids are obviously sort of, like, having different emotions about this.
Exactly.
Wow. I mean, like, not everybody's on a level playing field.
Not everyone's on a level playing field. And I think that what was too bad about it was it sort of missed an opportunity to really help the white kids in the room understand what everyone else was maybe going through because there was no attempt made to sort of parallel events that would have come from their own family histories that they would have understood. We're talking about a school where, like, everyone was fucking Jewish.
Right.
Like, there wasn't a historical event that they could have been like, you know, what was also bad and, like, maybe you could imagine what it would be like to be stuck on a slave ship. Maybe when your ancestors were in fucking concentration camps.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a parallel there.
Like, it just sort of, like, didn't take what is visceral and, like, interesting about history and make it real to you. It instead just it felt like this weird isolated event where people were sort of acting out sort of weird fantasies about what, you know, what they wish that they could have been the sort of power source in history. Like, it was sort of like teachers, like, sort of acting out weird fantasies. It was other students acting out weird fantasies.
Odd.
It had nothing to do with history because obviously lying on a school desk with your hands and feet taped with duct tape is not the same thing as being in a slave ship and never will be.
No.
I certainly don't feel like I understand what slave ship life would be like because I had this experience.
No.
But anyway, it was like this weird moment in educational history that I thought had ended. And then I read this story and I was like, oh my God, this is still happening to people. This thing that happened to me at two different schools in two different environments.
This seems like something that you would, like, hear about sort of, I mean, I realize this was reported, but it wasn't necessarily like a national, like, crazy news story.
I saw,
like,
this on Raw Story.
This just seems like something that, like, people would be so infuriated about that, like, it would be, like, a thing that would just be, like, axed from all curriculum, like, across the world.
I would have thought. I can't believe that, because, I mean, obviously this happened on a school trip of some sort, so this was sort of outside of the curriculum context.
At nature's classroom.
But I can't believe that there isn't...
terrible enough anyway.
Right? Sounds like you have to be fucking near grass and trees. But I can't believe that there is an outside educational organization that is still employing this strategy.
Yes.
It's... anyway. Weird. I had to include this story because I'm the only person I know that went through this twice in elementary school and middle school.
That's very flukish.
It was very flukish. And it was very, like, it was all, like, very progressive schools with sort of, like, vaguely hippy-dippy kind of curriculums where we were sort of, like, really trying to get at the heart of, like, why everyone's so upset about slavery as if, like, you can't ask middle school students to imagine why buying and owning people would be problematic and why that might be offensive to the people that you were buying and owning. Like,
yeah,
it's not hard to imagine what to sort of understand what was bad about slavery.
Also, I just feel like there's so many...
There was no other historical event that they kind of used this strategy with, which I was, like, that's why I feel like, you know what, if you're going to do it for slavery, like, why didn't you do it for the Holocaust?
Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't you do it for any of the millions of times in history that human beings have been horrifying to other human beings?
Couldn't you have just, like, showed a movie? Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not, like, a huge proponent of, like, showing films in classrooms because I think it's sort of, like, a lazy person's way to do something. But, I mean, like, if you're really trying to, like, get across sort of, like, what it feels like to do something, then you watch someone else having to go through it. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of...
One of the reasons that we feel like we've moved forward as a society is because we don't make people do that anymore.
Yeah.
No one is having to lie in a slave ship anymore because of American policy. That is one of the reasons that we feel like progress has been made since the Civil War.
Correct.
So... You would hope that you wouldn't have to put all your elementary and middle school students through that to teach them a lesson about how lucky they are for not being slaves. Like, what a crazy idea. In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We will...
Next week when we talk to you, the government may have
We may have no government next week, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty to talk about or not talk about.
Yeah.
There might be nothing to talk about.
Right.
There might be no government.
We'll have maybe have had an exciting filibuster.
We might have had an exciting filibuster. We are always on the lookout for exciting filibusters.
Big
and
time.
If there is one, we will post that information for you.
You'll know.
You'll know. And plus, next week, we'll be here.
Yeah, so just come back anyway.
So just come back anyway. All right, have a good week, everybody.
Bye.